Hello, and welcome back to the Citizen Power Podcast. I'm your host, Barsha.
And I'm Mon.
In today's episode, we will share with you some personal stories of experiencing intergenerational conflict, not only within our families, but also as members of this community.
Before we begin, we acknowledge and pay respect to the Muwinina people as the traditional custodian of Nipuluna Hobart. We acknowledge and pay our respects to all Tasmanian Aboriginal communities, all of whom have survived invasion and continue to maintain their identity and culture.
We would also like to acknowledge the triggering nature of this content and encourage you to seek necessary support if needed. So Mon, let me get straight into it. Yeah. In my opinion, intergenerational conflict refers to the separation of worldviews, norms, beliefs, and values between different generations of people.
Yeah.
I believe that this occurs inevitably in every community and it intersects with the impacts of gender norms and cultural beliefs that exists within these communities.
Yeah.
I also want to acknowledge that resettlement in Australia has had an impact on the ways in which you and I practice our culture. Although we're still connected to our culture and we follow it, moving to a different country and being in a culturally different landscape has meant that over time we have gotten used to the values and behaviors of our new home in Australia.
Yeah. We do come from a culture of hierarchy within family systems. Mm. This means that different people hold different amount of power and are given different amount of respect depending on things such as age, gender, caste, education, profession. Normally, young people lack power in our community as they are expected to be this passive recipient of culture, teachings, norms, values, or anything being passed down by older generations. Because of this popular belief that your parents and grandparents, basically older people in general, know better than you because they have lived more than you. Although this is understandable that older people would probably carry more experience and wisdom because of their age. I feel like this is often misused to exert a sense of dominance over young people with the "I know better than you" mindset to keep young people in check, which often comes with the cost of being dismissive of young people's experiences and not respecting their autonomy.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. For example, I know that when we were playing community soccer back in 2015 or 16, a few young girls had to lie to families to attend training and play soccer matches.
Yeah.
Or they had to get our coach to convince families to let them participate in community soccer, as some parents saw sports as a useless thing because they thought that such activities are stopping their children from being productive in studies and focusing on family responsibilities.
Yeah.
For some parents, there was a genuine fear that giving this freedom of being out and about for 2 to 3 hours, 3 to 4 times a week, could have had a bad influence on young girls, making them prone to risk-taking.
Oh yeah, I remember that. And you know, the girls were very interested in playing soccer. I also think, having experienced hardship in the camp, we also had some pressure from our parents because they wanted us to have better future and not struggle as they have.
Yeah, definitely.
And this came with the cost of limiting our social activities such as soccer. I think in our parents' perspective, it did not really benefit us or the other girls as it wouldn't necessarily be good or practical for our future or career development. But, you know, I guess us young people saw things differently. For us, soccer was a valuable thing as it provided us the opportunities to interact, socialize, build friendship, and also build our level of confidence.
Yeah, like you naturally get more autonomy as you get older.
Yeah.
But when I look back, I feel bad for those 14 and 15-year-old girls who were so disempowered to be their own person, because they had to listen to their parents who had such authority over them.
Yeah.
Another thing is that gender norms also has a lot to do with the different levels of restrictions placed on men and women of different generations. One of my biggest conflict with people of other generations mostly comes down to gender.
Yeah.
In the community, there is far less judgment for boys in going out, playing sports, and even things like drinking and having many partners throughout their life because of a co-ingrained belief that boys will be boys and that it is okay for them to explore and take risks. And hence, their lifestyles become justified. Whereas us women, we are expected to fit within a box of expectations which is drawn by our community, and these expectations keep increasing over time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Take raising kids, for example. Women are expected to be the primary caregivers by default, with minimal support. On the other hand, if someone sees the father change their kid's nappy for once, for example, they automatically get termed a good father.
Yeah.
So men doing the bare minimum is glorified and they're praised for this, especially by older generations, while women are overlooked or not praised for their hard work because people believe that this is just what we are supposed to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, I sometimes talk to older generation about how men are privileged in society and I only get glares back at me.
Yeah.
They'll tell me that men are not able to do things that women do because they are not skilled enough to do house chores or cook or look after the babies properly.
Yeah, I get the same response.
Yeah. This shows me that other generations are not used to thinking about gender deeply.
Mm.
They only see it as a inherent roles that men and women fulfill in families and society.
Mm.
But we know that gender is a social construct. Mm. And younger women in the communities are talking about the double standards of gender roles and how these traditions are restricting them from thriving.
Yeah.
But when we try to do something about this by voicing ourselves, we are called dramatic or worse. God forbid we live our life the way we want, breaking a few social norms dictated by older generations.
Mm.
Which boys are allowed to do, by the way, we will be called a troublemaker, a bad daughter, or someone who has lost their ways, basically a bad influence in the community, as if we should not be trusted to be our own person. So what I'm saying is that we are given little freedom of choice, and we cannot seem to have a conversation going on about what women of today need, what we need.
Yeah. Since moving to Australia, I have seen that critical thinking and independent thinking is encouraged and independence is embraced. It is the complete opposite in my community for young people. And I think living between cultures is a key factor to be considered when talking about intergenerational conflict for resettled communities. For example, from my experience, some multicultural communities or even families have a lack of boundaries when it comes to personal space. Like my mom will often go into my room and start folding my clothes or cleaning up when she's in her cleaning zone, even though I have told her not to do so because I can never find anything after that. Living in Australia, I feel a strong need for privacy, and it seems like my mom feels that there doesn't need to be any boundaries because we're a part of one family and because she's my mother. Because of this difference in outlooks, I sometimes get into arguments with her because I see myself as my own person who has a mind of her own.
Yeah.
And I want people to take that seriously and not as me being dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's also very hard to change such ingrained patterns all of a sudden because I think in all the generations before us, I doubt that there was a time where boundaries and privacy were actively sought by people.
Yeah.
So you know, Mon, how we have been planning to move out of Tasmania for ages now, and we are finally at a place psychologically and financially where we can afford to do so. But moving out unmarried is such an alien concept in my community that even I didn't know that you could live independently until I came to Australia. I wanted to move out since I was 19 and my mom kind of had an idea about it. So a few weeks back, I told her about my plans to move to Melbourne at the end of this year. And I explained why I'm doing this and also assuring that I'll always be visiting her. But you know what? My mom was not even ready to acknowledge that I'll be moving, and she does not plan on doing it anytime soon. She got angry at me and she told me to stop talking nonsense and how no such thing is going to happen. I think she subconsciously knows that I'll be moving regardless, but what baffles me is our parents' ability to not talk about things because they think it will make this situation real. And this is completely different to how we communicate and process information, which is by talking about things that are bothering us or things that we don't understand. Yeah, anyway, I can't do much about what my mom's response was, but I do hope she'll be more and more prepared as the end of the year comes closer.
Yeah, I can totally relate to your experience, Barsha. I have been communicating with my parents since we initially planned to move out. And you know, my parents, especially my mom and some of other relatives, were very reluctant to accept and even avoid talking about it to some extent. I continuously had to talk about moving out with my family to kind of normalize the whole situation. Now I feel like they're a bit open about the idea of me moving out, but I can still sense some hesitancy. I think now they have kind of finally accepted that I will eventually be leaving. But you know, I sometimes hear things like, now you have a job, you don't really need to move, you can just stay here and support the family. And at times, I constantly have to reassure them that a job is not the only reason why I want to move. And telling them that I want to be independent and learn to support myself financially and explore more possibilities. And I think they tend to be okay when I say these things. But, you know, I can just feel that they don't fully agree with me.
Yeah. What really bothered me at one point was that once I was trying to speak to my mom about moving out, and in a moment of weakness, my mom said, move out after you're married. I lost it then because she knows me. She knows my views on marriage and she knows how I want to be independent and older before I even start thinking about it. And I was pretty offended hearing that because I felt dismissed.
Yeah.
At that point, I thought that maybe for my mom, the issue is not me moving out. The issue is that I, as an unmarried woman, would be living by myself without family. And she was probably concerned about the things that society would say about me and the stigma I would face.
Yeah.
I understand that people may have something to say. But I also understand that someone, somewhere, would always have something to say no matter what I do. I cannot compromise on what I want to please people who don't know anything about me. So I have this mindset and I have the willpower and the strength to continue being my own person regardless of social consequences such as gossip or stigma.
Yeah.
But I guess that this is a big deal for older generations. Obviously, I wouldn't be able to stand it if someone was talking negatively about the people I love.
Yeah.
However, what really gets to me is how we are expected to avoid stigma at all cost, even if it means jumping into big decisions like marriage.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you mean there. I kind of had similar experience.
Yeah.
So I was having conversation with my relatives about potentially living in with a romantic partner before I ever decide to get married. I was telling them that I would like to have a better understanding of my partner before committing to a lifelong relationship. This was not well received by my relatives. They tried to talk me out of it, implying that live-in relationships are not culturally accepted. They want me to have a small cultural ceremony before I ever begin living with my partner. I was not ready to accept this. And Barsha, we have similar views on marriage.
Yeah.
It is a big decision. And I personally believe that you have to really know a person to actually commit to this big decision.
Yeah, Mon. And there is social stigma associated with living in with your partner or living by yourself unmarried in our community.
Absolutely. Yeah, it does bother me as well that my parents would focus more on what other people in the community have to say about my decision. And would focus more on community views than actually try to acknowledge what would work for me and make me happy. I do feel dismissed when my parents do not acknowledge my perspective.
Mm.
But I guess as young people, we tend to see things differently.
Yeah, we do.
What I need from my parents is for them to be more accepting of my autonomy and my worldviews than being constantly carried away by these traditional societal expectations. Yeah, these expectations also comes out as a caste system hierarchy. Although we have resettled in Australia for more than a decade now,
yeah,
the caste system is still pervasive within our community. So a few years ago, I was dating a boy from a different caste. Mm. And one day I asked my parents and grandparents whether it would be okay for me to date someone from another caste. My grandfather got a bit furious and said if I ever dated or married anyone from a different caste, they would be required to hold a funeral ceremony. And this was supported by my parents.
Oh, no.
Can you believe that, Barsha? I was shocked. I realized how different my values and beliefs were from my grandparents and parents. How could they let go of my happiness to uphold the societal expectations of caste system? I couldn't understand why the caste system still existed in the 21st century among educated and empowered communities.
Yeah, you know, before you said this, I felt like the caste discrimination is not as apparent in the current era.
Mm.
And I assumed that this was because community members don't see each other often now, or they have been accustomed a bit to non-discrimination. What I can gather now is that there is a lot less physical show of discrimination around caste, but
yeah,
the discriminatory mindsets still tend to be common in older generations,
mm-hmm,
especially in the form of the culture of looking down upon the marriage between low caste community and other castes.
Yeah.
People get scared that lineages will be ruined by inter-caste marriages, which will also make our ancestors very unhappy.
Mm.
Families involved cannot have a functioning relationship, and the partner coming from higher caste will be discriminated against by their own community. I think all young people get quite frustrated when our parents are scared of their child marrying into a lower caste family because they know what their child will be socially subjected to. So there is awareness that these discriminatory systems are hurtful, but surprisingly, they do not want to address the social inequality of lower caste people.
Yeah.
In that, rather than tackling the issue from the roots, people just want to stop the marriage and prevent children from living a lower caste life.
Yeah.
The complexity is that we thought that the marginalization of lower caste persons would not be relevant in the Australian context. But it seems that we have brought this way of being with us in resettlement, and it continues living with us in distinct ways now. Of course, we can speak against it and adopt an inclusive, non-discriminatory approach.
Mm-hmm.
But young people developing a voice and having a choice is not received well in the community.
Yeah.
Our families also may think that we're being bad family members or bad children when we are not able to accept their outlooks. But then our families have a completely different understanding of what a good family member looks like.
Mm.
And this has been changing across generations. For older generations, a good family member looked like an obedient person who carries family values with them across life, helps out at home, and carries out the social and family roles assigned to them.
Mm.
For us, the conversation is not necessarily about being a good family member. It's about being a good person.
Yeah.
And how much of a family person you are has a lot to do with how much you love your family and have their backs.
Yeah.
Not really to do with having similar ideologies or meeting all of their expectations.
Mm. I also want to acknowledge that the trauma of our parents and grandparents' past can explain a lot about why there is little focus given to social change. They have literally resettled to three different countries and had to live in distress about how they are going to access basic human needs, such as food, water, sanitary products, warm clothes, firewood, nutrition, money, etc. their focus had always been surviving, and they have not really had the environment where, you know, they could prioritize things like reflecting on society,
yeah,
or fighting for social justice. This habitual pattern of apathy has become part of them now, which we can see visibly when there is a lack of deep thinking when talking about things such as caste system. But we as third generation refugees have passed the survival mode and are now wanting to thrive, which is new to the community.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Citizen Power Podcast and giving us your time. We would also like to thank TaskCard for letting us use their beautiful studio to record our podcasts. We cannot wait to bring you back another episode, and until then, take care and you'll hear from us soon. Thank you.